is Hope This Helps, an adequate podcast for information technology and sysadmin ilk. Professional, amateur, whatever. We are announcing show number 26. My name is Steve.
And I'm Tiffany.
Thanks for tuning in. If you are a returning listener, thank you and welcome back. If you are a new listener, welcome. We got a cavalcade of competence in the program tonight. Our categories include the boot up, forwarding, the world of E5 licensing, City, separating work from twerk, as well as That Is Accurate, and Ask the Stiffs question of the week, all coming up soon on Hope This Helps. So Tiff, what'd you learn at Internet Work today?
Internet Work today, oh, all kind of things. I've learned that I cannot talk most days, that I say a lot when I don't know how to talk. Internet Work, I feel very unproductive right now. I wasn't prepared for Internet Work.
I mean, it is Tuesday. It's like a second Monday where you might have survived Monday and then suddenly Tuesday just comes up and just whacks you and you just say happy Monday on a Tuesday, as my buddy once said.
That's true. I also did think it was Friday for a good portion of today.
For me, every day is Friday this week because I took this week off.
Right. And how is your week going so far?
It's going all right. I am not working and I am just doing various podcasty, video-y, recordy things. So it's like fun work. It's not like relaxing, but it's like keeping my mind busy, which is nice. And I also might have decided just to go to the beach tomorrow, which is also nice.
I think that's excellent. It's getting cool up here very fast. So
that was my sentiment.
Yeah, not very many beach days left.
Right. And I figured if there was a day to go to the beach where social distancing was remotely possible, I figured it would be this week, the week I have off in the middle. And I looked at Google Maps. The beach said it wasn't going to be very busy during the day. So I was like, you know what? Let's just do that. Let's just put the parks reservation thingy in and we'll just go for it. That will
park's
be tomorrow.
Recommendation. You just put in, it's like park roulette. They just tell you which park you're going to.
Pretty much. Although I had one specifically in mind.
Yeah, the whole, 26 miles of beaches.
Yeah, something like that.
It's not very much. Or coast. It's not a lot.
Yeah, there's one really specific one I like to go to and I usually frequent. Mm. So we'll just call it that one and call it a day.
All right, sounds like a plan.
Yeah. So speaking of Tuesday, did you ever want to feel better about your day?
Always.
KPMG was trying to adjust a data retention policy and ended up deleting 145,000 users' personal chats.
Oh, I feel for them, and I also chuckled a lot.
I chuckled, because this was like, someone was in like the Security and Compliance Center and was trying to remove someone from a policy, and clearly, I don't know, how does this even happen? How did it go from remove one person to unapply the policy from everybody and nuke all the chat histories?
Oh, it's quite easy, I must say, especially if you don't have like a good change management or any sort of really anything. All it takes is anyone who has access to go in there and start adjusting retention policies. And sometimes you think you're targeting one thing and you don't get a second pair of eyes on it, and then you apply it, and once the magical little tool runs, goodbye things.
Based on the wordage of the public statements, it sounds like it was just human error, and I think there's some room for improvement in their change management because they seem to be a little bit blindsided by this, and I don't know if they had backups. They probably didn't.
No, and unfortunately, once it's gone, it's gone. Teams is its own special little flower, so getting messages back might, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, even when you have the team's chat history on, half the time you can't retrieve the chat history. So there's also
unless you
that.
Have like 12 hours to scroll and wait for it.
Yeah, I tried that once. It wasn't fun. I was trying to find like one specific message from maybe 5 days ago in a very busy chat group message thingy. And it was hard. It was hard to find that message.
Chat group message thingy. You should definitely trademark that.
When you click a new button, just call it new chat group message thingy.
Coming to a Teams client near you.
KPMG, what even are they? They're KPMG International Cooperative, also known as KPMG. They're a multinational professional services network and one of the big four accounting organizations. Oh, okay. So accounting.
So we trust them with money.
Yeah, at least in the Netherlands you do. Yeah, we trust them with money. Yeah. And I hope they weren't doing any record keeping or bookkeeping out of Teams. because that's gone at this point.
Womp womp.
They stand for Kleinveld Piet Marwick Gordeler. Oh God, I don't think I'd pronounce that correctly.
No.
And it was a merger. Oh, it was two separate companies prior, and then they merged in 1987, and that's the merger name. Huh. Well, that's fun. Never heard of this organization, but I guess they have some teams tweaking to do.
Mm-hmm. Apparently popular enough to get themselves an article on the internet.
When you get an article on the internet, you know you've hit the big time.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, however, I don't think this is a situation that you want to be in the internet for.
No, this is up there. Well, maybe not quite up there with like the levels of like when Emory University SCCM'd all their computers to a factory image, or when Garmin got ransomwared. This is not the good kind of article you want to get spoken about.
No, that also sounds like a great time.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's KPMG. I hope hope they're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe
I hope so too.
Found a backup or recovered
or something.
We've broken the ice with people that are doing worse than us today.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Let's go on to patch management stuffs. So Susan Bradley released her patch management survey results the other day for both consumer and business. I was unable to read the business one because that was behind the Ask Witty newsletter, which I currently do not have access to, but the public one, which is the consumer-sided one for Windows 10, was published with all kinds of fun data. A lot of it was rather unremarkable, I'd say, or predictable at best. A lot of the core pain points of Microsoft updates seem to remain. At the same time, a lot of users just seem to be a little bit more accepting as this is just how it's going to be for Windows 10. So I think it's more just things are just kind of stuck right exactly where they have been, with a couple of interesting comments regarding folks in the insider program versus the creator's intent versus the user's intent in terms of update cadence and pushing things out. Let's see. So I have a quote here saying, "I think Microsoft relies too heavily on input from members of the insider program who want change for change's sake, whereas most of us just want technology that works predictably and reliably." I'd say that's pretty fairly accurate. Microsoft takes a lot of feedback from the feedback hub in Windows 10 as well as the insider builds. The problem with that, though, is not everybody is reporting feedback through those two channels, particularly non-tech-savvy folks. You can supplement that with telemetry or other kind of ethically questionable methods of data collection, but your sample size may not be the correct genre of people that you want to necessarily make decisions off of.
It's very true. So does Susan offer up recommendations as to how to fix that?
I don't think she necessarily did.
I know she's very vocal about it.
She is. She's very good at least presenting this data to Microsoft as a neutral third party of sorts, as opposed to Microsoft's own data collection systems.
Oh yeah, she's very well spoken about the topic in general. I'm just curious to see what her stance is of ideas. I know Microsoft really hasn't done a whole lot in regards to this other than, here you go, here's a new patch.
The overall mood of this article is, it's not like exactly gloom and doom. It's just there's room for improvement, and and it's a little bit of an issue of just more of the same problems remain, where it's like in Windows 7 and 8.1 we had a pretty good system of patching. It gave you a lot of control, and in Windows 10 we lost a lot of that. Particularly it is most noticeable when you just try to check for updates in Windows 10. In Windows 7 and 8.1, there was a clear distinction of checking for updates versus installing updates. Mm-hmm. And in Windows 10, it's all or nothing. You click that button, the train starts moving, and you can't stop it once it's begun.
The cumulative patches were really nice for a lot of things and really bad for a lot of things.
Yeah, I like the idea of it's just less KBs to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if something is broken inside those KBs, any little thing, you have to roll back the entire KB and wait another whole month, which can leave you open and either vulnerable, or you have the patch installed and you're just dealing with pain, which is annoying.
Now you're like, ooh, I don't really want that anymore. Good times in the patching world.
Yeah, another quote from, I guess, one of the survey results, or someone submitted something here saying, "The company has taken a straightforward patching system in Windows 7 and 8.1 and made it as difficult as possible to stay up with all the changes. Their arrogant attitude on pushing out corrupt patches leaves much to be desired. If a competitor came out with a reliable OS that would run Windows apps, I would change in a snap. Ouch.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah.
That's painful.
Yeah. Of course, this is just one comment out of who knows how many, but that was one right. that was included in the article Susan wrote, and I just thought it was notable just to kind of highlight and read. I just thought, wow. Mm-hmm.
To really hit it home.
We need OS 2 or maybe OS 3. We got to get IBM on the line, get some competition for Windows. Or maybe like a version of Linux that can run Wine really well, or run Steam took Wine and converted it to an engine for running Windows games on Linux. It's escaping what it was called exactly, but it was a real good advancement for Wine and Windows applications running on Linux in general. I don't know how open it is, but Valve seemed to figure it out fairly well. Maybe someday we'll have an OS that can leverage all that. And maybe Valve will do it. Who knows?
Someday. I bet Valve will. They like figuring things out.
So it's September 1st, but August is still fairly close to us.
Yeah.
I saw you had Teams August updates, and I was like, September 1st.
It came out yesterday, okay? It came out yesterday.
Still technically August.
I know, but it came out one day before September. What am I supposed to do?
It wouldn't be a Microsoft update if it was labeled for a month and then came out in a different month, like 1803 or 2004 or you
It's the opposite of like cable billing, you know, instead of billing me for the month I haven't used yet, they're going to tell you about it already after you have it.
Exactly.
Why not?
So what's going on in the Teams August updates?
All kinds of cool stuff. This is probably, in my opinion, one of the smaller Teams updates that it has come out in the last couple of months. At least I think for heavy, hefty feature-wise, I think it might be a little bit more useful for some folks out there. So meeting organizers and presenters will be able to lock their videos as the main view for all meeting participants. There's nothing like someone's face popping up in the middle of a presentation because all they did was click their mouse or chew.
I hate it when Teams tries to do that. When like if you, like you said, you click your mouse or chew and it switches over to them. And it's like, why are we looking at Joe looking at his computer when someone else is clearly talking?
It like almost is an out for people. Like it calls people out on things that they're doing, clearly showing that they're not paying attention.
Yeah, and Teams does this thing where it tries to get like artsy and cute with its displays, so the video grids of people, where it will like bisect your video view and try to pan and scroll to your face. And, you know, if you have something like a dog walking by, it tries to focus on that. It gets kind of stupid at times. So I'm happy they're trying to tweak this and make it more traditional. You know, it's cool to get cute with these video views, but it can get easily fooled and you don't really want that to go awry in a business context.
What they really need to add is that when it gets focused on like a dog or a kid or someone walking up behind, it needs to just do a face swap.
Yes, just an immediate face swap.
Just an immediate face swap.
You know that update that like was pushed to the Surface Pro X and is also on iOS now, I think, that like uses AI to adjust your eye contact regardless if you're looking at the webcam or not? Why don't we just do that with like your entire face? Just make your whole head looking at the other person, regardless of where it's angled and regardless of if the camera is even focused on you.
That'd be so good. It would be so creepy.
This sounds like the greatest advancement of technology I've ever
I think we
heard of.
Just had a really brilliant idea.
Why not go all the way? If we're going to make it creepy, let's make it super creepy.
Yes. Facts. Meeting recordings. The meeting recording storage area for RareStream is not available. So if you weren't aware, Teams recording uses Stream. However, there's a caveat to that that is really hidden in the documentation, that if you don't have a Stream license applied, it actually stores it for, I think, 20 days in the Azure storage, but you don't really know about it and you don't have any sort of administrative control over it. At least with Stream, when you start applying the licenses, you start getting control, but in some countries, probably Germany is my guess, Stream is likely not available. So therefore, people who want to record or want to download, there's now going to be the meeting recording storage for when it's not available. And my guess is probably in that same Azure Video storage that I believe has been renamed and rebranded 1,000 times and is sort of like a secret. At least I feel like that it is.
Yeah, that sounds right. I remember you mentioning Stream can saved to Azure in some way, in some way that isn't super clear to admins or users for a little while.
Yeah, it's very unclear. And once the 20 days has passed, there's no way to get it back.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if you're not using Stream. Yeah, so it's nice to see that they're supporting the countries that it might not be available in. An optimized Microsoft Teams experience will be available or is now available on VMware Horizon 8.
Oh, that's fun. So like if you're using VDI or some kind of virtualized desktop environment and you have Teams installed, which is interesting considering Teams is a cloud product, like why would you need to use this in a VDI where you could just, I don't know, log into it in a web browser on anything you have, I guess?
That's true.
That's my challenge to this feature, I guess.
That's a good point. I do believe there might be some functionality or maybe some features missing that aren't fully available yet in the Teams.
I guess I can understand it if you're a more secure environment. For whatever reason, they don't want you to access Teams from like your home desktop or a phone, right, or you want to lock it down. I suppose you can lock down Teams in that way or restrict what IPs can communicate with it. In that case, a VDI would be worth it, I suppose. But otherwise, like this sounds like a really niche feature to me, just off the top of my head.
I agree. I don't think that it really, maybe for remote workers, I can't think of a use case personally of when I would feel it needed.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's a thing. Someone clearly needed it and there was data for it, so they put it into this update.
Yeah. It's true. New Teams device to enhance collaboration in meetings. So lots of new devices coming down the line. Just really, Logitech now has approved devices. For those people who might be in the office or maybe who need to webinar or do broadcasting, the Logitech Switch stuff does now work for that. So even possibly, it even works with Microsoft Teams Rooms, which I don't really know a whole lot about since not in the office and not really having any sort of devices that I would need to add.
Yeah, that sounds like something you could really only experience in the office, I guess. Unless, aren't they doing the virtual room stuff where they arrange people in like a funny little like auditorium setting where they just kind of superimpose your head or body into these little seats?
Yes.
As if
yeah, so I did use that the other day. It's really weird. It was like sort of very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was about to ask how that is. It's probably just weird and awkward. It probably will go down as some strange feature that just sounds like a good idea in concept, but it sounds like it's out of a movie where it just sounds better than it actually is implemented.
Yeah, it reminds me of like those jib jabs. I think that's what they're called.
Oh God, jib jabs. Yes. Your face just goes on.
It reminds me of jib jabs.
Oh no. Yeah, I could. That's not a good feeling.
No.
Your face is just superimposed onto some other body. Yeah, that's not
good. And like I at least want to pick the body. I at least want to do like the jib jab like Christmas elf one if I'm gonna get to pick.
Can I be like the Mies where you have no appendages, you just have like feet, hands, and a head and maybe a torso?
I would like to choose my feet, hands, body, and legs, please, Microsoft.
Custom and appendages and Teams.
I really hope that no one hears this and then said in like the next meeting for like Teams features, they're like, let's add jib jab.
Oh God. Yeah. The strangest return of a early 2000s internet phenomenon comes back in the strangest way possible.
In your Teams meeting, coming to a Teams meeting near you, add a jib jab.
Yeah.
Oh, good times. So they've also added a few things as far as chat and collaboration. They've added a real-time presence, although I don't really know how that works because I honestly always sort of thought it was like that.
Yeah, so you're always quote-unquote present in Teams unless you're not paying attention to your Teams. I think what it means is there's been a couple of apps that have come out where it's like a Hangout video thing where it's just a room that's always open, an open call, and people can drop in and drop out really fast without much of a loading screen or anything like that. So it's possible it's like just an open session and it makes drop in, drop out really quick. And it kind of fills that niche of when you were physically in the office and you would just pop into somebody's cubicle or you could yell over a wall, things like that.
Oh, I think you're right. I had heard that this was coming.
It's kind of more of, again, sort of like the virtual rooms, but maybe a little less awkward and more believable where you just got to talk to someone for like maybe 5 seconds and ask them a question, almost like a walkie-talkie style. that's probably what this feature is intended to do.
Is it also maybe similar? Because I'm trying to like see here what exactly it is, because I had heard of it. But is this where if I'm doing something, is it like, you know how in Discord, it'll be like playing blah, blah, blah game.
Yeah. Oh.
And you're like, I don't want people to see the fact that I am playing. I can't think of an embarrassing game that I wouldn't want anyone to know.
Yeah. Like Cat Quest 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
That also begs the question of, I really hope it's not hooking into like every process you're running on your computer. And it's like, oh, I opened up some EXE that wasn't work related and now everybody knows. That would be kind of weird. I hope it's not that deeply integrated.
I see. Okay. So the concept of presence is different for chat applications like Teams, Slack, and Skype for Business because the user signs into a central service and tracks their presence status over time. A user's presence can change. So what's changing? Teams has been criticized in the past because it's not updated user presence status as quickly or as accurately as it should. For instance, it can take several minutes. So real-time presence changes would come with a pleasant... So it's just faster?
I think it's faster. I personally never experienced that problem, so I'm not quite sure what the deal is with that. But I have heard from other people before that they would IM me and they would say, hey, I need you. And I'd tell them, like, dude, I'm in a meeting. And they would say, oh, sorry, it said you were green over here. I'm like, no. And then as they're IMing me, it switches over to in a meeting. So maybe this might be just a bug fix wrapped up as a quote-unquote new feature. I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of.
Well, right, because presence in general used to be controlled by Exchange and auto-discover and all the fun stuff. So now that Teams uses its own presence, and there were some issues with the interoperability between Skype for Business. And so I wonder if it's as they're deprecating Skype for Business, availability becomes easier for them to manage and sort of keep track of.
It's possible it could be just shifting the old auto-discover method of presence to some other new method that they haven't previously announced. But that kind of makes this a little bit less exciting then. Maybe it's not what I thought it would be.
Right. I was hoping it would be better. But I don't know.
That's Microsoft for you. You hope it was better, and then the actual thing you get is kind of meh.
So they are merging the Skype for Business and Teams connector for PowerShell into the Teams module. So that way you don't have to do the Skype connector soon. Maybe that was in August anymore.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, Skype for Business is going away in just a year and some change, I think. So that won't really be a problem soon, but until then, it's nice to just merge them into one.
And then there's some development updates that have been added. The one that I'm most excited about is the Power Automate triggers for Teams actions. So creating flows to create new teams or automatically add mentions and some more cool automation that's being added that makes Teams administration easier. Because right now, if you're going to do the set it and forget it model where everyone can just create teams, that's great and fine. But for a lot of organizations that are security focused and don't want to have to like worry about PII spills and all that stuff, I know there's DLP policies and all that great stuff, but a lot of companies just simply aren't there yet. So being able to create teams rather than buy a really expensive tool really helps out the overhead that Teams is right now.
Yeah, let's make the automate be actually a thing in Power Automate and let's not think about it as much. That would be really awesome. So I'm all for that.
Let's do it. All right.
Sweet.
So that's all I have for Teams. I know we talk about Teams a lot, but it's a huge product and everyone's using it.
It's a thing everyone's using. It's a big thing in the Microsoft 365 ecosystem, so it's definitely worth talking about. There's a whole lot of little other features in here too, but we'll just leave that in the show notes if anyone else is interested in poking and prodding the fine details. And so that's the Teams update for August. So let's march forward, or forward march, should we say.
Forward march.
To maybe something a little bit different from Teams, maybe a neighbor of Teams, Microsoft Exchange, and some changes that are coming up to the external forwarding system. And this is kind of a follow-up to something we discussed in episode 10 regarding external forwarding and all that kind of fun stuff. But this is actually a change that it actually might be coming out very, very soon if it hasn't already been released, possibly maybe today. We'll see. But it's the Office 365 ATP external forwarding controls changes.
Woo!
So with this adjustment, email forwarding is going to see a couple of adjustments. Adjustments, yeah. How many times can I say adjustments? External forwarding is going to be disabled by default for new tenants going forward. It will not be disabled by default for existing tenants, but you will be getting more controls where you can say, let's not enable external forwarding for everyone, let's enable it for the right people, because there has been data that Microsoft has collected stating that external forwarding tends to be the cause of a lot of phishing scams and attempts and successful nastiness with stolen data and all of that. So this was announced in July 20 as part of MC218984 and to be released September CY 2020. The review and assess action was stated as you need to do this by August 28th. So, You know, it was added to the roadmap on May 1st. A little bit short notice there, Microsoft. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
I can see situations where if you are forwarding out to Salesforce or something, and this whacks you and it considers Salesforce as an external recipient, there could be some breakage. Might want to adjust your everything or look at what Microsoft might have changed on you, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we put down as notable for this? Internal automatic forwarding of messages will not be impacted by this change. No action is needed if you don't want to allow any users to automatically forward message externally or if no one in your tenant is currently doing so. Well, that's kind of case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I didn't see that it was for new tenants, but I do believe you.
Yeah, where did I see that? Oh, so on the page, if you click on the roadmap and expand the Office 365 ATP external email forwarding controls, it states, we are also moving to disable external email forwarding by default, so organizations are secure by default. So it sounds like it might not be an immediate change. They, you know, when they say we are also moving to, who knows when that might actually happen, but it sounds like they are heading down towards a path where you cannot forward externally by default. It will need to be gatekept by security and compliance, or you will have more granular control on who can do that and why, or maybe audited.
This is what I have. On September 1st, 2020, the auto forwarding policy will be enforced for tenants who have configured their policy to on or off. For tenants that have made no change and no users externally forwarding prior to September 1st, 2020, the setting automatic will default to off, and automatic forwarding will be disabled. For organizations that have some users externally forwarding prior to September 1st, 2020, the setting automatic will default to on, and we will contact you separately when this change for your when this will change for your tenant.
Oh, okay. I'm curious as to what it defines as external forwarding, because there's a couple ways you can do it. You can have a forwarding SMTP address defined in your forwarding settings, or you can have inbox rules saying if this message comes in, send it out to this external address. I wonder if it covers both bases.
It does. That's for all forwarding.
That's good. So do you think this would be something that they would be monitoring, like at the send connector level or that kind of?
Yeah. So there's two. So if you have a transport in place, it will not affect you. So this is what you need to do to prepare. Use the auto forwarding messages report to identify which users in your tenant are automatically forwarding messages outside the organization, and then focus on the users with either SMTP forwarding or inbox rules. So exactly what you said. Exchange transport rules are unaffected by this change, and then you'll want to configure the outbound spam policies. So outbound spam policies are different than exchange transport rules. Those are found in the Security and Compliance Center. And I didn't really truly know the difference because I hadn't been working in Office 365 EOP for the last year or so. Once you get in there and you sort of figure it out, you kind of start questioning, why am I doing this twice? Because I already have the transport rule. So I'm hoping, because I didn't add the outbound spam policy, that it'll be fine, or it will just automatically configure because it's already off for me. But I'll find out.
And I'm sure most of us will also find out, because this change apparently goes live today. So way for us to be timely here.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be a mess for everybody, I feel like.
It's a mess, but it's going to be a necessary mess, because that is a big, big problem for phishing. And if someone's account gets compromised and you're wondering, why am I not receiving email anymore? and you discover that someone got into your account and very stealthily can flipped on a forwarding rule that just sends out to blah, 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 blah at gmail.com, and get all of your information is getting rerouted that way to some guy in a shack in his backyard making some cash off of you because he just scraped your credit card information or your PII or critical organization trade secrets. You know, the sky's the limit on what the data is that's flowing through there.
Exactly. No, I 100% agree with that. All right. Well, that's forwarding.
Watch out and check all your stuff and analyze how you're sending and receiving email and forwarding and all that. And hopefully stuff ain't breaking this week on you.
Fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's move on ahead. The world of E5.
Oh, E5. It's so incredible. I mean, I know that you are getting it, but
if you have the money, E5 is nice.
Yeah, it's like buying the McLaren. It's so nice.
It is the Rolls-Royce of Microsoft licensing, and it's getting better and better because more stuff like Defender ATP and all kinds of fun stuff is coming to E5 or is already here.
I can't even wait. I'm just overwhelmed with joy. I don't know. I've had a lot of people ask me about it too. It's almost like you become the popular kid overnight when you get to use E5. It's like, right? Oh, you have E5? Tell me all about it. And I'm like, E5. Okay, let me tell you all about it. I'd love to talk about it. However, I have found myself extremely overwhelmed at the same time because a lot of the features that we talk about and have been talking about since January, I now get to touch. And then I realize that the configuration of them is not just a click of a button.
It's not just a click of a button. You also have to, I don't know, if you have governance, you got to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
You might have to map some things out and talk with some folks. And depending on how big and bureaucratic your organization is, you might have some problems with that. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just so many amazing things that are built into it. The identity management aspect, even just the new revised version of the Cloud App Security Suite. So good. It's just incredible. Every little nook and cranny is just very well thought out, almost too thought out.
I'm a fan of the Cloud App Security compromised email account reports, mm-hmm. where it can detect suspicious inbox rules, where before it was kind of an arduous process where you might have had to script it out yourself, but it's nice that Microsoft 365 now scans for that and can alert you and possibly take action on that.
Yes. I think that's amazing. The automation aspect of it, anyways, is just really beyond, it's magic. I'm convinced it's magic.
Yeah, big, big fan. Yeah, there's far too much stuff in this to even, you know, cover it all. Defender ATP, right, is also a feature you get with A5 or E5 licensing. I forget which one.
Well, I think education is A, enterprise is E. So it's the same structure.
They both start with E. You think that would...
Oh, yeah. I know, education, enterprise. E15, E25.
Give me an A. What's that spell? Education.
Random number. Letter. That's a letter, not a number.
A for education.
For education. That's how we know.
Yeah. So as part of this, you get even antivirus or Defender analytics for things like Android and iOS, too, mm-hmm. with the E5 licensing. Defender for Android is rolling out soon. You need the E5 license to basically even use it at this point. But it does things like scan all installed APK files on Android. It can do web filters and all kinds of things. Not necessarily Intune things, but security things for your mobile devices.
Yeah. How do you feel about antiviruses on mobile devices?
I'm a little torn. I think on iOS, I don't know if it's really honestly needed. Android, I think it's there's more of a case for it because on Android, you can customize more. You can sideload APK files. If you can sideload and install, I think that alone might be enough of a reason for antivirus scanning and at least signature matching, some kind of guardrail to make sure you're not installing, you know, a fake Angry Birds app and it suddenly slurps up your data. Malware on a phone kind of operates differently than malware on a PC, especially if you're not rooted or have a lot of access that isn't specifically social engineered or anything like that. So it's more has to do with data theft. And I think that's kind of what Defender ATP is focusing on. So not only will it scan installed applications, but it'll check your configurations and networking settings, all the little bits and pieces that could get you compromised in some way.
That honestly does sound pretty useful.
Yes, and there's value in that, and that's why I think it's not available by default. It kind of should be, I think, but it's, yeah, if you pay for the E5, you will get this. I think it might be coming to iOS. I can't quite remember if it is or not.
I do believe so. They also did just drop Bit for Mac, so I would guess that it was also coming for iOS.
Yes, it is coming for iOS. I don't think it's out soon. It looks like they announced it back in February-ish.
Okay.
I feel like it probably won't be as effective on iOS based on Apple's restrictions, so it might have to get kind of creative in terms of how it protects you. Android, you, depending on the build and the model and make, you can kind of do more. I know I'm saying the same thing over and over, but yeah, right. iOS, it might be trickier. Or Apple might not be so happy about someone else coming in and running AV for them on their devices. Anyways, that's all I got to say about E5. I don't know if you had anything else.
Maybe for our next segment or something we can do continuously is like cool E5 tips and things like that, or cool discoveries of E5, just because it is so big.
We're basically going to become an advertisement for E5 and make Microsoft some money. That yes. sounds like that's what we're going to start doing here.
Look at this really cool feature I found.
We're basically becoming a commercial for E5. I'd hope this helps. That's what we're doing.
I'm not sad about that.
Whatever. We're enough of a commercial for Microsoft to this podcast as it is. Might as well just keep going.
Exactly. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We built this city.
We built this city.
You did that.
I did that.
Your titles are always the best.
Don't you like that?
I do. So what is this? What are we building?
What are we building? Okay, if you are a sysadmin and you are not using this tool, you need to start using this tool. This was one of those tools that like I was sitting at work and using one day, and then I realized, oh my God, I forgot about this tool. I need to like tell somebody about it because this is something that
is magic.
Absolutely. It's magic, and it needs to be used more, especially for folks who just don't know what the hell is going on in their infrastructure, or if you just need to document something, or someone says, tell me everything about server A right now, and echo, okay, sir, yes, sir, I will hit this button right now, sir, to document this whole server, sir.
Hold on.
Hold on, sir. So, Citi. What is Citi? I don't know what Citi stands for. It's SYDI. It is considered a collection of scripts that documents things like servers, Exchange, Network, SQL. It's basically just a collection of VB scripts.
Good old VB.
Built on an older foundation. I'm sure it probably could, in theory, be connected, converted to PowerShell in some capacity. And there is a GitHub page for it. There's a website for it. It was built by a guy, I think, in like 2007 or so. Hasn't seen a lot of updates in quite some years, but it still functions perfectly. I can personally vouch for that. So the script that I use for Citi is the Citi server piece, which is considered the most developed of the Citi suite. What this does is it is a VB script that starts up and states, okay, what is your server name? I'm going to reach out to the server using WMI and conventional remote techniques to probe the server, grab everything I can about it, and collect all the info and put it into a nice Word document for you that you can then save and send to somebody.
Fun. That is actually really cool.
It is really awesome. The data that is written out is in a Word document, so it's a little bit strange that way. So I wouldn't necessarily use it as a continual documentation that you can keep adding onto. It's something where if you aren't quite sure of what a server does and you need an executive summary that can be put into a document you can email out to someone, this is a really good tool to use. It'll collect information like all the installed patches, the network configuration, the server name, local users, local groups, services, firewall, all that kind of stuff. It will grab and put into a document for you.
That's great. So do you have to run this on a DC? Where can you run it?
So you need to run this on a system that has Office installed, and you need to run it as an account that will be able to probe the destination server. So you can run this off of your own work machine, provided you have the network visibility to the destination server, and you are running the command prompt or PowerShell window as the user that has the necessary permissions. If you got both of those all set, the script will just work.
That is great. Also super easy. It reminds me of that one tool that Microsoft had developed and then kind of gave up on. They did that a lot with really useful tools. And wasn't it like Network Mapper or something like that?
Possibly. I think,
because
yeah,
oh, something well, like that. It's going to bother me, but Microsoft had one that did exactly that, and it would just pop out like a beautiful diagram, but you needed to have Visio installed.
Of course.
And yeah, you had a Visio, and it would actually draw out the network diagram for you.
That sounds cool. Yeah, so
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, so this is a lot like that. There is more than one city tool. There is also, these are apparently considered deprecated now because they're considered for older versions of Exchange SQL and Linux, but there are scripts for Exchange SQL and Linux. But the one that is kind of the bread and butter is City Server.
I do like, it does remind me sort of like the SimCity or the city building games.
Yeah, basically, it's not something you have to install. It's just a script that hangs out and you run it. You can look at the source code on GitHub if you don't trust what it does. It's not PowerShell, it's .vbs, so I'm not super versed in the code specifically, other than it is basically like your typical Visual Studio flavor variety. But it does do what it advertises, and it does it well. It's a great tool for if you are a sysadmin, you've been dumped into an environment where you don't quite know what everything does, and you just want a flyby method of documenting each server. And maybe then you can sort it out and figure out what needs to go, what needs to stay, what can be organized, all that kind of stuff. City Server, highly recommend.
Okay, I found it. It's the Microsoft Active Directory Topology Diagrammer. Reads an Active Directory configuration using LDAP and then automatically generates a Visio diagram of your Active Directory and or your Exchange server topology.
Oh, that's awesome.
The diagrams may include domains. Yeah, I think. So the last time it's been updated is 6/6/2011, but it does still work.
Yeah, City looks, according to the GitHub, the last commits were from roughly 4 years ago, and it was just mostly for language packs. The significant update was from 6 years ago, so this is where this is going on. 2014 or so was the last update.
Yeah, no, that's a long time. I'm also looking at this article now. A tool that is often forgotten about is the Microsoft Active Directory Topology Mapper. What a name.
Yeah, that sounds important. What a name. AD Topology Mapper. Let me look at that.
Yeah.
Because that's a good related tool.
It is a really good related tool, and I don't know how it will work with newer versions of Visio, but I can imagine that it still does work.
Probably simple enough. It should really be part of like the sysinternal suite, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a cool tool that would fit right in with the rest of them.
It's very cool. I really like using it.
I like how they misspelled diagrams in the description. Diagram.
Yes.
Two N's.
That's how you know they just didn't care anymore. They're like, ah, we're getting rid of this. It doesn't matter.
Oh, well.
All right.
That's cool. So shout out to City and the Active Directory Topology Diagrammer.
Say that five times as fast.
Oldie but goodies for documenting, yes, if you are a sysadmin and need help with all that.
We're going vintage.
I didn't know who wanted to say it first, but this next title, Separating Work from Twerk. So this is a little bit of a semi follow up to a previous discussion we had on separating your work from personal, especially at home, endpoint wise. And this is more of a talk of like ideas and suggestions for using a personal machine versus a work machine and where to really draw the line on what should pass where.
Mm-hmm. And, it's true.
You can get in a lot of possibly legal trouble if you are not careful enough about mixing personal and work data and hardware, potentially. There's always the horror story of you enrolled your phone in MDM for your company and you got subsequently fired one day. And however, your phone, which was once your personal device, has been enrolled in your company's MDM and you've handled personal information, and suddenly someone hits the big old wipe button on your phone. That may be by design, but you got to be careful that you don't suddenly lose all those, you know, 50 vacation photos that you took the other day, and vice versa, of course.
And today I was having a similar discussion about, do these MDMs and even MAM policies read all of a user's apps on their phone, such as if they have Grindr was the example that was used, ironically.
Ooh,
such if they do have those things on their phone, is that a company policy driven thing, especially for BYOD companies or companies that are allowing users to use their own phone. I mean, is there a way around that? Is there sort of, does the device need to be read completely, or are there magical things that can happen? I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the advanced MDM and MAM things these days, but I will be over the next few months.
Indeed. So ideally, the organization should have this all figured out, but if you're in places that are in transition for MDM, or they haven't defined policies yet, or they might take a shotgun approach where they say, regardless of what you had on your phone, if you contain anything that even smells like our company, we need to wipe your phone. So you need to be prepared as an end user for that possible flip of a switch where they might need to take and wipe your device. And if you have personal information, you might lose it.
Right. And if you're using a backup tool, I feel like MDMs are sort of a thing of the past. I hate to say it for all the MDM. They're just are very, I know they're customizable, but if you're just trying to protect your company data, I'm really all about the MAM policies.
Yeah. I mean, MDM might have its place with Microsoft Endpoint Manager. And if they're still like distributing out a separate dedicated device for company work, then I can see a use case for it. And of course, you know, company laptops or whatever, that's fair game as well, especially with the changes to Intune and the merger with Intune and SCCM lately.
I do think it is fair to ask your users and to set policies around certain restrictions if they're going to add accounts and add access to their phone, such as strict passcodes, you know, setting a number or letter requirement for that, you know, how many people leave their phone wide open on tables and things. They don't think about it. It's the same thing as leaving your computer wide open. So requiring things like that. What kind of networks they're connecting to. So require encryption. So if the device is encrypted, ensuring that the device is updated on current revisions, because a lot of MDM or MAM policies won't work on older versions. And then ensuring things such as not jailbroken devices, because again, as you mentioned, you don't know what people are loading onto their devices or what they're allowing.
Yeah, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. I think a more really easily explainable one would be like if you have OneDrive and you just casually installed it and loaded it on a personal machine and it pulls down 50 gigs of company data, you have a dilemma now.
It's so true.
There kind of becomes a point where you have to question when it is okay to use a personal machine for work things. If you can ensure that the data that you are accessing is not truly on your personal work machine. Some examples of this that I can probably vouch for is like, say you have Teams, you can use Teams in a browser. You can access OWA in a browser. If you really need to access it on a personal machine, I would honestly recommend sticking to those, because while you have local cache data in a browser, it doesn't necessarily stick around forever, and it's not being downloaded locally. I wouldn't recommend installing full Outlook and downloading, you know, X amount of gigs of your cloud email to your personal system, because then you're in a pickle right there. You now have a personal machine that has mixed with your work life, which is not super great.
Yeah, no, that's the only problem I have. Is now you're married to work.
One rule of thumb I tend to try to adhere to is keep internal network and on-premise things to work issued hardware entirely. So don't go out of your way to like install a Cisco VPN client on a device that you own or is your personal machine. Keep that to your work device. That way there's really no debate as to whether or not you're mixing it with your personal life. Inversely, I wouldn't load a lot of personal things on your work machine either, because you A, don't want your work kind of interfering with your personal life, and B, you don't want to risk the possibility of that mixture again, or that info ending up in some kind of backup or archive in your company in some place or whatever, depending on the circumstance.
Yeah, exactly. And if at all possible, just try to keep your work. BYOD makes it very difficult.
The cloud does kind of help that, though, at least when you have your resources only in the cloud and your device acts kind of as kind of a dumb terminal, that will help things out significantly, I'd say.
It does. I think the hardest part with that being is the fact that the company can now see everything on your phone, unless that there too. Are new current ways around it. But I think it would be really hard to apply policies to anything that you can't see.
Yeah, that's kind of an update on a previous topic where separating personal from your work life and making sure that those two stay fairly far away from each other if possible, and leverage the cloud as much as you can if you must use a personal device and try to make it not write to your hard drive on your local system whenever possible. Use web apps or web portals, whatever you can. Really resist the urge to install OneDrive on your local system and download your work data. That will get you out of a lot of legal entanglements or possible encryption, DLP, you name it, all that kind of stuff that you might have to deal with if you start mixing these two.
Yeah, it's very true. This is why you want to have all sorts of really good policies in place that do protect the data as well as the end user, really. You don't want to put the end user in a situation that they're uncomfortable, but for sure.
Yeah. So that's my little spiel on separating work from twerk.
Ask the SIFS question of the... No, I just skipped. This is accurate.
No, we're not skipping that. That is accurate, though.
No. Okay, so I have a fun one this week. Squeaky Lobster is the name of a toy lobster, and he lives in the Microsoft Exchange office, and he is also part of a love story and would be actually built into a registry edit. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Good times. Yeah. I mean, I was very much so too descriptive for this one, for it to be made up, right?
Well, I mean, if you don't know what it is, it kind of makes sense to explain it a little bit.
Yeah, no. Do you think that is accurate? I mean, probably because you're going to cheat and you already know about Squeaky Lobster.
I have heard of Squeaky Lobster before, just organically. So this blog post is from 2006, so I assume it's probably legit.
Oh, it is very legit. So I met Squeaky, the real one, the little toy lobster.
The actual one?
He goes out. Yeah, the real one, the one in that picture.
Look at that. The Exchange Squeaky Lobster.
Yeah, no, he's real. And he's a very coveted member of the Exchange group. So if you do ever get to meet Squeaky, he's a pretty cool guy. He's a real lobster. And sometime in a period of time in which I was like probably 7 or 8, this rubber lobster named Squeaky, I feel bad, he's going to get real offended. He has a Twitter. He was a gift or something along those lines. I'm trying to recall the whole story, but he was given by a girl to one of the guys who worked on the team, and as a joke he built into one of the registry edits for Exchange the Squeaky Lobster condition. So it was actually shipped in a window, I believe, like a Windows update, and then in Exchange, like old version of Exchange.
Sounds like Exchange 2003 SP1.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Definitely during a time in which I was in middle school.
Was it ESE? No, I was going to say Lobster ESE, starts with L. Yeah.
Huh. Lobster does start with L.
Oh, right. Looks like it was it was commented out in Exchange 2003. So
that's so... Oh.
Yeah, that's sad. Oh, well.
That is so sad.
Rest in peace, Squeaky Lobster. He was in Exchange for a while, but I think they finally, quote unquote, yes, we are ending the insanity. That's what the comment says.
That's amazing. Oh,
that
so
is
sad.
Wonderful.
But it's a great little Easter egg that they put in there. And oh, look, Squeaky Lobster enabled products. It has a whole list as well. So the document or the blog post will be in this. It's a really fun one to read up on and pretty fun story for Microsoft. I'd like to see more of those types of stories, really. They're pretty fun.
It's always fun to see little Easter eggs like that make it into products. Squeaky Lobster.
Pretty cool. So I do need to, I have a meeting that I need to go to right now.
Oh, that's fine. I can wrap it up here with the question of the week and
okay,
all that.
You got this under control?
Yeah, I can take care of this.
The ending.
The ending.
I'm just getting paid.
For once.
I didn't realize that it was already that time. We've had so much fun today.
Yeah. So, all right. So we'll see you, Tiff, later and I will close this all out.
Right. Awesome. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, Tiff.
I'm gonna stop this.
Okay.
Bye.
Anyway, so let's finish this off with Ask the SIFS question of the week. Tiff did have a section of this, but the question of the week is, what is something you suck at as a sysadmin? For me, I am perpetually bad at subnetting. I learn it, unlearn it, and relearn it every few years or possibly months or so, and for some reason my stupid brain can't ever figure it out long enough. It's one of those things where if you don't use it, you kind of lose it in terms of knowledge, especially if you're not using it day to day. I'm not necessarily a networking person. I only use it when necessary. And before Tiff left, she also noticed that she says anything networking is something that she's not necessarily super great at. So we all have our things that we're not super up and up on in IT. And if you have anything that you suck at as a sysadmin, feel free to tweet at us at our Hope This Helps Twitter account. That's a good segue into the end of the show. So we help you, you help us. Rate us on iTunes if you like us. Feel free to subscribe to us. We publish episodes. We try to be weekly. Sometimes we're not as much. This is not our main gig. We are, of course, full-time sysadmins. This is how we get all the good stories and topics and everything. We do weddings, funerals, first communions, post-incident reviews. We try to do it all. I hope this helps. And we also do a podcast occasionally. Anyways, so check us out on all the major podcast platforms. Rate us on iTunes if you think we deserve such a rating. I think that will be it for this week. So from everyone here, Tiff in Tiff's absence, I am Steve. Thank you for listening. We hope this helps.